This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org. Elmad, E-L-M-A-D, .pardes, P-A-R-D-E-S.org.
Welcome to our third and last installment of This Pardes Life. As you know, in our first show, we looked at happiness, then we looked at survival, and today we're going to be looking at a third very, very central concept for many people in the Western world, and that is the whole issue of dignity. We have, again, Meir in our studio, and I'm going to start as I've started the other two and ask you, Meir, is dignity a Jewish concept? This is something we've taken from the secular world. How would you translate dignity? What are the ramifications of being created, B'Tselem Elohim?
Okay, David, dignity is the most definitely a Jewish concept. And as you noted, it is rooted in the idea of people being created, B'Tselem Elohim, which is in chapter 1 of Genesis. Tselem Elohim means the image of God. And the being in the image of God gives people majesty. And that perhaps is the source of the idea of Kavod HaBriyot, the dignity of human beings, the fact that we are in God's image, we have that majesty. Everything else that we find in Judaism, I think, emanates from this initial position.
Interesting you say that, Meir, because I've always been puzzled by this exact issue of Breishit, that on the one hand we're told to conquer the world, and the other hand, we told Ula Shomra and to protect it. I'm interested, in light of what you just said as an opening statement, which one is it? Do we kavshua? Do we conquer the world? Or do we protect it?
When the Torah says that people are created in the image of God, they are given the mandate to rule over the world. V'chivshuha, yirdu ba'aretz v'chivshuha. How do we rule over the world? By being like God, by creating, by furthering creation. There is definitely the potential for us ruling over the world in a way which is very much destructive. In order to be able to, as you said, protect the world, you need the second chapter of Breishit, where it speaks about the creation of man as being from the dust of the earth, as being placed in the Garden of Eden. And in that context, people are actually given the mandate, le'ovda u'lishomra, to serve and to protect. If I had to now take these two chapters of Breishit, which give you two very different images of human beings, one is a human being who's in the image of God, who is a ruler, who has power. The other one is the image of a human being who is there to serve. And in fact, in the second chapter, it's the first time where we have people being given a commandment by God, as a way of acknowledging we are the servants, God is the master. It reflects the unique position that people are placed in. On the one hand, vis-a-vis creation, we are rulers. Vis-a-vis God, we are servants. What I would contend is that our human dignity is reflected in our ability to balance these two sides. To be able to have, on the one hand, majesty, and on the other hand, to have humility. Majesty vis-a-vis creation, humility vis-a-vis God, and with that humility, that's what creates, in a certain sense, the check to make sure that rather than ruling over the world in a way which abuses the world, we rule over the world in a way which, in fact, protects the world, and I would even say more than that, empowers the world.
You spoke about empowering the world, ruling over the world, the wisdom that one can have in ruling well. And I'm wondering what you, what the Torah, what Judaism thinks about perhaps the person close to the bottom of the totem pole, or the person who has broken the rules, so to speak. I know today people speak a lot about criminal rights, criminal dignity. Where does this fit in to your or to the Torah's view of looking at the world?
It's actually very interesting that in the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 21, when it speaks about a situation of putting someone to death. Presumably, the only situation where you would ever give anybody the death penalty is in a case where I have a hardened criminal. Because according to Jewish law, you have to have two witnesses. The person has to be warned. He has to, in fact, accept the warning. Yet, nevertheless, the Torah says when a person is put to death and in certain situations would actually be hung, it says, do not leave their body hanging. By leaving their body hanging, this is a curse to God. But make sure, it says it, ki kavor tikperenu bayom ahu, make sure to bury that person on that very same day. This section, which is talking about a criminal, actually becomes the basis of a general law in Judaism, which is that if someone dies, they should be buried immediately. And why? Because by burying them immediately, that is a way of acknowledging their Tzelem Elohim. Because there is a certain problem when you see a dead body. Where is that majesty? Where is that dignity? And as a result of that, we need to somehow bury that body to maintain within our own minds the image of a human being who is majestic. As I said, how do we derive this general rule? From the case of a criminal, which seems to be saying that even someone who is a criminal has that human dignity, should be given that human dignity by having them buried immediately. It's even interesting that the Torah, when it discusses the various forms of capital punishment, tries to, even when you put somebody to death, and again, we're talking about the worst types of criminals, to do it in a way which maintains their human dignity. And this actually is based on the verse, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself. So that I think this idea of human dignity is something which extends across the spectrum, and irregardless of who the person is, and I'll just say parenthetically, whether they be male, whether they be female, whether they be Jewish, whether they be non-Jewish, whether they be the worst type of criminal that we can imagine, there are certain minimum ways in which we should relate to any human being as a human being and show them the most minimal dignity that is coming to them.
That's when they're dead, Mayor, but I'm interested in how criminals should be treated from a halachic viewpoint while they're alive.
If I had to give a certain example of a criminal, take the example of somebody who kills unintentionally. Okay, according to Jewish law, one who kills unintentionally is to be sent to a city of refuge. Now, on the one hand, the person is sent to the city of refuge in order to protect them from what is known as the avenger of the blood, so that they will not be killed. But on the other hand, there is a whole discussion about what is the nature of these cities of refuge. And these cities of refuge are Levite cities. They're supposed to be what we would call not too large, not too small. But the very fact that they're Levite cities is so that in the end, the person who is sent there will not be penalized, but ultimately what we would say today, rehabilitated. With the idea being that our attitude to someone who is a criminal is not ultimately that I want to punish them, but ultimately, if possible, that I should actually try to get them to change their behavior, to try to get them to somehow restore their human dignity, which they themselves destroyed by having committed a crime. Perhaps this is something which I think is worth noting, that if we acknowledge that people's dignity flows from them being in the image of God, then that means that they should take that seriously. That means they should conduct themselves in a way which is actually maximizing not only their dignity, but the dignity of others. We have a famous statement in Pirkei Avot which says, right, who is the one who is honored? The one who shows honor to others. If you want your dignity to be taken seriously, How much do you show that dignity to other people? What happens when you are abusive to other people? You have, by being abusive, you have somehow destroyed their dignity, but I would even argue that in the process, you've also destroyed your own dignity. Anytime a person sins, the language which is actually used in the Torah is that they have defiled themselves. Defiled themselves because they have somehow pushed God out of their body. And therefore, from a Jewish perspective, someone who's a criminal, what we would like to do is to bring God back into that person, and by doing so, restore their human dignity. That's why the idea, for example, of tshuva is such a central concept in Judaism.
Meir, in case anybody didn't notice from your answers to my questions, you are known as a teacher with strong and firm opinions. But what people may not know just by listening to you is that you're known as somebody who is very, very respectful of people you disagree with. To what extent do Jewish concepts of dignity guide your own personal behavior?
I would say that it's very much at the core of my behavior. In fact, what I would say is, given your promo, David, that maybe showing respect to other people is actually a very real challenge to me. And I would say because as somebody who is very passionate about what I believe, okay, it is sometimes very difficult to hear people who take positions which are very much contrary to what I believe. And not only that, but where I am absolutely convinced of the truth of what I believe in. And yet at the same time, I think that because of my being steeped in Jewish sources, it is something that I constantly work on. To what degree is it that I am able to actually listen and to be able to be open to hearing what other people to say, to not immediately write off somebody because they take a certain position, but to be able to say that, in other words, despite a position somebody takes, despite maybe some type of behavior which somebody engages in, that I have to be able to see the whole person. In fact, there's a very famous statement that appears in Pirkei Avot, which is Ehovet kol ha'adam, love the whole person, which means don't just see one aspect of that person, but try to see the totality of that individual. And by doing so, then maybe it gives you something to be able to anchor yourself in, to be able to then show them that respect which is due them.
Meir, we've touched on contemporary challenges to the issue of Kvod HaBriyot with criminals. I'm interested actually in going to the workplace a little bit to see how dignity is sometimes challenged. I found something very interesting of all places at the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, who stated, "We believe that every person is precious, that people are more important than things, and that the measure of every institution is whether it threatens or enhances the life and dignity of the human person." Especially given the background that the Bible actually permits slavery, I'm interested to hear how Judaism relates to dignity in the workplace.
Okay, first of all, I would say that I would actually sign on with this statement that you have from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, and I think that it actually is very much rooted in Judaism. When we talk about the concept of slavery, so for us, of course, it seems to be a very, very distant concept, and it also seems to be appalling that the Torah would allow for such an institution. But I think when you, first of all, look at certain verses in the Torah, and certainly when you see the explanation which is given by the rabbis, you see how Judaism tries to take an institution of slavery and turn it on its head. What do I mean by that? Number one, there is a concept of a Jewish slave, which is very clear, something which is not advocated, but something which is maybe allowed. And not only that, but the whole thrust within the Torah is to make it clear that such an institution is a temporary institution. The Torah talks about how a Jewish slave must go free during the Jubilee year. In fact, one of the things which is actually fascinating is in Exodus in chapter 21, when it talks about somebody who steals and then is sold into slavery because they do not have the means to pay back what they've stolen, how the Torah tries to do everything to somehow say, only 6 years you will be a slave. But then it says, what if that person says, but I love my master and I want to remain here? Then what we do is we pierce that person's ear. What I would say is that perhaps reflects something in the human psyche, which is of people who do not acknowledge what their dignity is, of people who enslave themselves. Why do people do that? Because it's easier in many cases to be a slave than to be a free person. I'll just tell you one story that I had when I did my basic training in the Israeli army. This was in the late 1970s. At that time, there was a massive aliyah from the former Soviet Union. And I remember that I was with someone who was a professor in the University of Be'er Sheva. And in my naivete as an American, I said to him, isn't it wonderful for you to now be in a place where you are free? And his response was, yes, I am free to die. And here I am. I was taken aback. I was actually in shock. And he said to me, when I was in the former Soviet Union, so I knew the language, I knew the setting, my education was provided for by the government. Not only that, my education was free. Afterwards, I was set up with a job, with an apartment. And he said, and now here I am, I'm free, it's competitive. And I don't necessarily have guarantees that I will have an apartment, that I will have a job. So what good is being free? And to me, that really hit home in terms of what I will call a slave mentality, but what I see as being the total negation of human dignity. That, in other words, the fact that I am someone who is free, the fact that I have the opportunity, the fact that that's a challenge, and the fact that I even have the ability to rise to the challenge should be something which is ultimately what I'm striving for. And to hear someone who basically says, you know what? I think in many cases it might be actually better to not necessarily have those opportunities and to be, quote unquote, enslaved because it's safe. And I think that that raises a very interesting question today. I'll give you an example in the workplace. Today we don't have slaves, but yet at the same time, maybe we do have a form of slavery. When people are employed in a certain place and allow their employers to take advantage of them, which sometimes could be sexually, which in other cases could be just in terms of, you know, the jobs, the things which are expected of you, and where you won't stand up and express your dignity because you're afraid that you'll be fired. To me, that's a form of slavery. Okay? I would even say that when there are people who are on a kibbutz who basically remain there because it's a safe place. I'm provided with a place to live. I'm provided with food and with all of the needs which I have, but I'm not motivated to, in the end, really push myself and to really, you know, try to explore all of my potential. To me, that's a, how should I put it? A resignation to a certain reality. It's accepting, I would say, even a form of slavery, which is in a certain sense denying my human dignity.
You touched on sexual exploitation that can sometimes happen in the workplace and really is a form of slavery. Fascinatingly, around the world, including in Jerusalem, we've recently had the phenomenon of a slut walk, which is a protest march against explaining or excusing rape by referring to any aspect of a woman's appearance, in which mostly young women will dafka go dressed in a very sexually revealing way. These women claim that for their own dignity, they should be able to dress in whatever way they want. What do you make of that?
I disagree with that. I would say very strongly disagree with that. And as I think that for someone to dress in what you call slutty way, that if anything, that is a total desecration of your dignity. Okay, and I think that one of the things which Judaism is concerned with is part of my dignity is also what is the image which I project to other people? How will other people look at me? Okay, I think that there very is a very serious issue of women who will, so to speak, sell their bodies, okay, in terms of nudity, okay, which certainly happens, I think, in the movies, it happens in all kinds of magazines, okay, where I think that this is a question of objectifying yourself. I do not know any man who would actually look at a naked woman and as a result of that, respect them more as a dignified human being, but would look at them as simply an object of their sexual, okay, fantasy and sexual desire. And I think that that's something which anyone has to be conscious of. In other words, that to what degree is it that when I, and I use the term dress a certain way, what is the image that I generate? I know somebody, for example, an ultra-Orthodox neighbor of mine who was used to always dress meticulously, okay, in a three-piece suit with, and he would say that because this is my dignity, because I want to project an image. When people look at me, they will automatically say, oh, this is somebody who's very important. But the reason why I dress that way is not so that they should look at me as being important in and of myself, but because I represent something. I am somebody who is representing, right, a servant of God. I am representing somebody who is a model of, right, a rabbi. If I am a rabbi, then that rabbi should dress a certain way. I know somebody who is a priest, the Kohen, who also feels I need to get dressed up because I have a certain position. So I think to a great extent, our dignity is very much connected with also how people look at us. And as a result of that, so that is why I would not at all agree with that position that you articulated.
Interestingly, Micha Goodman has spoken a few times at Pardes, and he pointed out a very interesting differentiation about people dressing. He said that in America, when people dress nicely, it means that they respect the people around them. In Israeli society, very often, when people dress very nicely, it's taken as this person thinks a lot about themselves. I'm interested if you could discuss the idea in terms of Kvod HaBriot, of having Kvod HaBriot toward to others or respect to others versus self-respect and the balancing between these two.
Well, I think obviously that the two are very much connected. And I think that I come back to what I said at the very beginning, that there is a question of how do I see myself? And to what extent do I see myself as being the interface some way between God and between the world? And the degree to which I see myself is also presumably how I will project myself to the world out there. And what I would say is that sometimes it also works in the other direction. To what degree is it that I am also aware of how the world is perceiving me? And as a result of that, that will also determine how I should look at myself. And therefore, as I gave you the image of what I said before, if I go around walking naked, by and large, in the realities that we are in, people do not look at someone respectfully when they are that way, then the question is that really the image that I want to project of myself, or is that really the image of myself? Okay, I would actually say for that for me personally, I have a certain image of myself, and that's exactly what I want to project. I actually said that once to somebody who when I was teaching in a certain institution, the person said, well, you are a rabbi, and when you teach in this institution, we expect our students to show you that respect as a rabbi and to stand up for you. As such, therefore, we think that you should dress up, and at least minimally, you should wear a white shirt with a nice pair of trousers. And I said to them, my response to the person was that I only wear a white shirt and a pair of trousers on Shabbat. But during the week, I actually find it very hard to do that. And I was actually thinking about why is that such a problem? And I realized that for me, well, on the one hand, I want to dress in what I could call a respectable way, but I also don't want to be formal. And I would like to be someone who comes across as being more informal, more approachable, which is why I don't get dressed up with a white shirt and a suit and a tie, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, I also don't go wearing jeans. And I think that this is perhaps something which every person has to be able to find. Okay, what is it that somehow to them is reflecting their dignity, where other people will show them that respect? And so I would not put it in, you'll excuse me, black and white terms. But what I would say is that in the end, okay, but maybe every person should realize that there are certain minimums, okay, of ways in which they dignify themselves, which also is inviting other people to respect them.
You went a little bit, Mayo, from the abstract and the universal to the parochial, speaking about how you dress and how you want to be perceived. So for my last question, I actually like to bring it back to Pardes. We have gone through a process at Pardes, partly led by you, in which we've moved from safe to brave space. Would you like to explain to our listeners a little bit what those two words mean and how Kvod HaBriot B'Tselem Elohim, dignity, all the words that we've been speaking about have come to play in this process?
Well, Pardes has always been a place which we call safe space. And safe space means the following: that every person who comes here should be able to explore their Judaism, who they are, without any preconditions, without any preconceptions, without anybody judging them in any way. And I think that that is something which has certainly been a hallmark of Pardes and is actually very, very positive. But on the other hand, there's what I could see as being also a certain danger. And the danger being that in safe space, there can also be the desire to constantly be validated. And not only to be validated, but to have everything which I do be validated. Okay, I remember that a number of years ago, I would teach for Pardes in America, and we would get feedback evaluations, and there was a person who once wrote on the evaluation something very negative about my class, and the negative thing was that she said, Mayer said that I was wrong. And she said, Pardes teachers don't do that, okay? And when I saw the evaluation, I said, first of all, I don't remember having done that, but if I did it, it had to be that that person said something that was so outrageous, was wrong. It was just, there was no way that I could possibly validate it. And therefore, what I want to say is the following, that I think we today live in a context where people, in order to be able to show respect to somebody else, to be able to acknowledge their dignity, always feel that we have to somehow validate and affirm everything which that person either says or does. And I think that that's actually problematic, because I think that in doing so, it actually leads, I said it's a dangerous situation, because it can lead actually to, at the very least, mediocrity, at the most, to very problematic behavior. What I think has to be is what we call brave space, where a person can actually articulate their position, where a person can challenge somebody else, can argue, where, yes, it is legitimate to say that what somebody is saying or maybe what they're doing is wrong, but to be able to do it in a way which is coming from a place which shows that I am doing this because I care about you, because I recognize your human dignity, I am also being critical because I think that you have potential to be doing much more, and that ultimately is your dignity. And therefore, I think that it's very important that we create a culture where if we truly recognize the dignity of others, where we also take them seriously enough, where we can critique them, where we can also expect of them the most which they're capable of doing, and where we can also say to them, you know what, we're disappointed that we think that you could be doing more and you're not doing it. But to do it in a way, and here I think the important thing is the way that you do it, to do it in a way which from beginning to end shows that my goal is not to put you down, my goal is not to destroy you, but my goal is actually to empower you. And I'll end by saying, and that is a Jewish value. There's a pasuk in the book, there's a verse in the book of Leviticus which says, you should rebuke your fellow person, but make sure you don't embarrass them in the process. And I think that if I take those two together, to be able to be passionate, to be able to also be somebody who believes in something, to be able to also be critical, and yet at the same time to always be conscious that whenever I do that, it is not to put somebody down, but rather to bring out the best in them, that is bringing out both my dignity and the dignity of the other.
Thank you, Meir. It's been an absolute pleasure to host you for these three programs. And I'm sure many of us who have listened to it feel happier. Many of us who have listened to it have a greater sense of dignity. And many of us who have listened to you are able to make wiser choices in times of conflict because we heard your class on survival. Thank you very, very much. I hope we'll have you back again soon. And people, please listen in for the next series with Tova Leah Nachmani on relationships.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org. Elmad, ELMAD, .pardes, PARDES.org.